Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and guess what? I am not going to talk about Oasis tickets being on sale at inflated prices. I'm not even going to discuss the other major headline of the week, informing us that Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer has admitted a new cat into number 10 Downing Street. No, let's look at a more serious question. How much do we really know ourselves? Are we self-aware about our shortcomings, foibles, and downright sins, or do we tend to focus on what needs to be fixed in others? Tonight, I'd like to share what happened when an intruder tried repeatedly to break into our house and taught us a life lesson in the process. And then there was the occasion when my wife Kay and I were hugely embarrassed by a disturbance in a rather nice restaurant. Finally, I'd love to tell you about the time when my bottom caught fire and I, with a stunning lack of self-awareness, was blissfully unaware of what was going on. So let's talk about knowing ourselves here on Lucas on Life on Premier Christian Radio. Knowing ourselves. We were delighted when a pair of starlings picked the eaves of our house to build their nest. We watched in awe as daily their woven masterpiece of twigs and moss took shape, a solid safe haven against high winds and driving rain. The hatching of two baby chicks turned us into a couple of cooing admirers who were surely ready for grandchildren, judging by the amount of baby talk that gushed out of our mouths. "Look at that little squidgy fluffy bundle, it's so cutesy-wootsy," I, as an adult person, remarked to my wife, Kay. "I know, and listen to the little baby chirping for its mummy," she replied, offering a serious commentary on infant birdsong. It was all rather lovely until the early morning head-butting began. Each sunrise, we were awakened by the sound of Daddy Bird, I mean the male starling, hurtling himself at speed against our bedroom window pane. At first, I thought we had a repetitive intruder. The bird apparently peers at the glass, attacks it, momentarily recovers from what is probably a nasty headache and a corrugated beak, and then repeats the whole performance again. This goes on for about an hour until the exhausted feathered fighter pilot pops off, presumably for an aspirin and a nap. And he's not the only one who's tired. Our daily dawn wake-up calls were turning us into a couple of red-eyed ex-nest admirers who were fantasizing about showing the birds the business end of a shotgun. Don't write in to complain, I'm just joking. Extensive ornithological research, actually 30 seconds on Google, reveals that our bruised and bewildered birdie friend is not doing this because he's had a bad experience with a double glazing salesman. Rather, he sees his own reflection mirrored in our window and, thinking that he's spotted a predator, launches into the flurry of attack. He sees himself and he senses danger. And that got me thinking, which is always dangerous. I was hearing that dull, repetitive thudding, and then I wondered what I see when I stare into the mirror at me. Looking beyond the superficiality of mere looks, for I too am blessed with a corrugated nose, I wonder if I tend to spot the reflection of a good, godly person called Jeff, someone who's basically upright and moral. Perhaps at times I look at myself with arrogance and pride, especially when I hear of the embarrassing failure or the unspeakable evil of someone else. Appalled by them and momentarily glad to be me, I become like the queen in the Snow White fairy tale with a mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all attitude. I tut-tut at others' sins and silently pronounce that I could never, ever fail as they have failed, and I become haughty and judge them harshly. But worse than that, perhaps I fool myself. I no longer know myself. Surely you and I should realize that the reflection that stares back at us when we look in the mirror is a mingling of grace and grime. As we follow Jesus, we affirm that God has touched our lives and made us capable of greatness and love and sensitivity and sacrifice, and yet we can also wound, betray, and perhaps even be guilty of staggering crimes. Isabel Allende describes her realization of this in her book, Paula. She says, "Sometimes, when I was alone in some secret place on the hill with some time to think, I again saw the black waters of the mirrors of my childhood, where Satan peered out at night, and as I leaned towards the glass, I realized, with horror, that the evil one had my face. I was not unsullied, no one was. A monster crouched in each of us. Every one of us had a dark and fiendish side. Given the conditions, could I torture and kill? Let us say, for example, that someone harmed my children. What cruelty would I be capable of in that situation?" She ends by saying, "The demons had escaped from the mirrors and were running loose through the world." Knowing that we can be both beauty and beast should not only help us to discover more about our strengths and weaknesses, but it should also make us a little more willing to realistically assess our fragilities and weaknesses and make us a lot more gracious when others do stumble. They are but fellow travelers, companions with us in the holy struggle. Together we daily fight the same fallen human condition. We can, in turn, be predators and saints both. Pecking at our own reflection, it's a bad, senseless habit, but let's learn to look at ourselves with a mixture of gratitude and sobriety. That will surely save us from some of sin's madness, and it will help us look at others with softer, kinder eyes. When we know ourselves, we realize that sometimes it's us who is to blame. Settling down for a treat, breakfast in a rather posh restaurant, we soaked up the ambience of the place. There was this gorgeous old fireplace, logs smouldering, emitting that glorious smell of charred wood. The walls were bedecked with silk wallpaper, and waistcoated waiters dashed here and there with platefuls of hot, steaming food. It was lovely. Gentle background music, canned but well chosen, complemented the sedate atmosphere. But then suddenly everything changed. The music shifted into a twinkly rendition of Bar Bar Black Sheep, which played through in about 20 seconds and then repeated and repeated and repeated incredibly again. 10 minutes later, having heard the question to the aforementioned black sheep concerning whether or not it had any wool, and discovering once again that indeed wool was plenteous, 3 bags full, in fact, we felt restless and agitated. Surely the MP3 player, the streaming, the CD, whatever, surely it had got stuck. Other diners were frowning, following that great British tradition of noting that something is wrong, but not actually saying anything about it so as not to cause a fuss, but then looking forward to the opportunity of grumbling about it later on. 10 minutes later, the sheepish repetition was beginning to feel utterly torturous, and so I decided to raise the issue with a passing waiter. "Excuse me, can I ask, what's going on with the music?" He tilted his head to one side, the strange posture of one who wants to communicate that they're listening intently, and agreed, "Yes, sir, that's very odd. I'll go off and check." Off he went, restarted the player or streaming device, only now there were 2 tracks playing simultaneously, a cacophonic collision between Bach and those irritating sheep. Other diners, now emboldened by my inquiry of the waiter, moved into stage 1 of British complaining, which involves rolling one's eyes and sighing. The next stage would be full-on huffing and puffing, but we weren't quite there yet. The waiter returned to our table looking quite bewildered, but it was then the awful, hideous moment came, and the memory of it makes me cringe even as I share it here. The waiter pointed down to the floor to a handbag owned by one of our little group. "That music, sir, it's coming from that bag. Your bag," he cried triumphantly with the glee normally associated with a detective who has cracked a difficult whodunit case. And indeed, the music was emanating from our friend's bag. Somehow, a mobile phone had clicked on to a game app for small children, which was playing Bar Bar Black Sheep over and over and over again. Suddenly, the eye-rolling and sighing around the restaurant stopped to be replaced by chilly glares in our direction, and I felt the frost. I had complained, but we were the source of the irritation. Frustrated by the repetition, we were blissfully unaware that we were the ones to blame. Guilty as charged, my lord. We were guilty, actually, of a lack of collective self-awareness. We were the problem. In telling a story that's reminiscent of Monty Python, Jesus painted a portrait of a hapless chap who runs around with a magnifying glass, mustard keen to identify specks of sawdust in the eyes of others, but all along oblivious to a whacking great plank that sticks out of his own head. Apparently, this log in Jesus' day would have been the main support for a house, which would have made it about 12 meters long, a significant protrusion. This farcical scene is frequently played out, especially in churches. Fault-finding souls, eager to catch people doing or believing something that is suspect, patrol around searching for someone or something to correct. Sometimes they get together and form squadrons. When they find something that appears to be amiss, they pounce on it with unseemly joy, thrilled by yet another opportunity to highlight a problem or see others fail. There's a word for this perverse delight in focusing on the failures of others, Schadenfreude, which literally means harm joy in German, the peculiar pleasure people derive from other people's misfortunes. Sometimes we're thrilled when others stumble because we've simmered with envy at their success, or we justify being glad at their stumbling by appealing to a sense of justice. It's only right that they were exposed. They got what they deserved. But some psychologists believe that we are more likely to pop open a cork of celebration when others fail, when we dehumanize them. Viewing them as objects of scrutiny rather than real flesh and blood human beings, much loved by God, we take a pathological view, seeing them as exhibits rather than people. And ironically, when we do this, our unkind, cruel attitude might be far worse than the issue that we're determined to correct. But we can remain blissfully unaware of this. Again, utterly lacking self-awareness. Hobbies can provide distraction, and so perhaps some take up fault-finding as a hobby in order to spare themselves the demanding discomfort of self-discovery. Peering at others through a magnifying glass is just so much easier than staring at ourselves in a mirror. If we're in the habit of locating sawdust specks, perhaps it's time to focus more on what we're often blind to, our own faults and foibles. Meanwhile, back at that breakfast, the sheepish serenade was hastily silenced, calm was restored, but I still felt the need to depart in haste because the glares from around the restaurant continued. No one likes a picky complainer. "I think a rather huge apology to the staff is required," boomed a chap at the next table, and I complied, begging forgiveness from the grinning waiters. Who knows? If some of us have been plank-spouting, speck-hunting, picky people, it might be that we are the cause of some grief. Perhaps in our lives, a rather huge apology is required somewhere too. I learned about a lack of self-awareness in a rather fiery escapade. The BMW was a big, startling blue wonder and nothing short of beautiful. I admired it longingly, trying to erase words like covetousness from my mind as I did. It belonged to Chris and Jeannie, two very close friends. Now, I'm not normally a car fan. I scoff at television commercials that feature voluptuous ladies and slogans like Britain's sexiest car. Perhaps there's something wrong with my hormones, but I confess that I've never felt amorously stirred by a couple of tons of metal. But this BMW, it was a beautiful thing, and I eased myself onto the back seat, enjoying the luxurious smell of leather seats, and the car purred as we began our journey, bumps and potholes in the road, ironed out instantly by superb suspension, and then suddenly everything went wrong. Chris, the driver, noticed that the normally attentive controls were malfunctioning badly, and the trip computer on the dashboard was freaking out, warning us of all kinds of problems. I could smell oil and felt the need to testify to this fact. "I can smell oil," I remarked as casually as I could. Jeannie turned around and looked back at me and made a startling assertion. "That's not oil, Jeff. Your backside is on fire." It turns out that earlier that day, a new battery had been fitted in the car, which unusually was sighted under the back passenger seat, my seat, the one I was parked on. And unfortunately, the battery company had installed the wrong model, and so the terminals were sticking up a full inch higher than they should. So when I planted my behind on the leather, the seat went down, the metal frame of the seat connected with the proud terminals, which shorted out, and now the battery was on fire and the car's electrical systems were going swiftly into terminal meltdown. We quickly pulled the car over, jumped out at lightning speed, called the fire brigade and watched the beautiful machine go up in flames. Seconds later, it was a write-off. Chris was, of course, insured and said very graciously that he'd never really liked the car anyway. I was stunned by my own lack in the self-awareness department. You see, I'd been surrounded by smoke, a miniature inferno was gathering heat beneath my rear end, and I hadn't noticed. It was left to my observant friend Jeannie to point out what should have been profoundly obvious. So, take a snapshot of that scene and consider a parable. How often are we guilty of being blissfully unaware of the presence in our own lives of all kinds of shortcomings, character flaws, and sometimes downright sins? And people around us perhaps marvel at our myopia, and they're stunned that we seem blind to what is so very apparent to everyone else. Hopefully, we'll have the grace to respond with gratitude and kindness when, figuratively speaking, a friend quietly whispers, "Excuse me, did you know that your backside is on fire?" How many once beautiful lives now look like something of a write-off simply because of a refusal to listen? Let's pray that we will grow in self-awareness. Have a great week.
Lucas on Life.